parliamentary debate to remove age limits from the constitution. Local media reports Zaki throwing chairs at parliamentarians from the governing party, which led to the confrontation with General Wamala. For more about his call for the inquiry and protection of parliamentarians, I reach Ibrahim Semuju.
The Honorable Francis Zaki was booked and cautious by the current Minister of Works, the Honorable General Katumba Wamala, who is the former Army Commander, during the consideration of the Constitutional Amendment Bill that removed the age limit to allow Mr. Museveni to stay in power. He was again brutalized by soldiers who were guarding the president during a by-election in a rural district called Arua. So last week, NRM MPs came to Parliament complaining that the Honorable Zaki had abused one of them when he visited their constituency. And my view to Parliament was, this young man needs to be helped. He was boxed and cautious. Instead of subjecting him to numerous investigations, which is further abuse, he needs help himself because he was brutalized right inside the plenary.
Well, but what do you say to those who are saying your call is comparing apples to oranges and that the wrongs are not comparable?
You see, the MPs from the ruling party who were protesting for forcing the speaker to adjourn parliament, I asked them whether physical assault, whether beating an MP is a lesser offense than just an MP uttering words that are inappropriate. For you, you complain that one of your colleagues has been abused. For us, the complaint is that this guy, because that day, 2017, I was the first to be arrested and dumped in a police car. The Honorable Zaki was brought when he was unconscious. We had to make a lot of noise for the police to pick him, take him to Rubaga Hospital. So if you did not investigate a person who beat him right inside the parliament, who are you now to investigate someone who claims to have been abused miles away from parliament? Is that justice?
But do you think your call for parliament to also investigate is actually feasible?
I am only asking Parliament to set standards. You can't have an MP walking into Parliament during a sitting of Parliament complaining that your colleague has abused me, and immediately you are instituting investigation. Yet you, the same Parliament, you have an MP who was beaten nearly to death, and you do not carry out investigation. You see, the good thing MPs from the ruling party have taught us is that when they make a decision and it goes against you, can actually protest forcing parliament to adjourn. This is what we'll do. If they don't investigate General Katumba Wamala, who beat up Zaki, I am going to be demanding tomorrow. We will also make sure that parliament doesn't continue.
Are you not going to bring chaos in this case to parliament if you decide to take up this action?
I am only running from MPs from the ruling party, because on Thursday last week, because of too much noise, shouting and jumping up and down, they forced the deputy speaker, Honorable Thomas Taibwa, to adjourn parliament. I am just being a good student that when a decision doesn't go your way, you can actually force parliament to adjourn.
Wouldn't governance be hampered by this? Because some people were saying the very essence of you being there to represent your people will be defeated by such actions as to disturb the parliamentary business in Uganda.
If we are going to adjourn parliament maybe for a day or two, it means that the administrators, the speaker and deputy speaker, and other administrators at parliament will now have to sit and set standards. If an MP visits a colleague's constituents and abuses that person, is that matter brave, strong enough that Parliament must abandon its order paper and then begin discussing a complaint of abuse? I am only asking Parliament that please set standards. If an MP has been abused, let them go to court. If an MP has been beaten in parliament, that's a matter for which investigation must be carried out.
Ibrahim Semuju is a Ugandan parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. In Senegal, the founder of a think tank called the Africa Jump Center is calling on detained presidential aspirant Ousmane Sonko to stop his resumed hunger strike. Alion Tin B is also calling on the authorities to ensure there are no obstacles created to impede prospective voters from having the free will to choose who their next leader should be in next year's general election. His remarks come after Sonko, who leads the opposition party Pastel Le Patriot, announced he was resuming his hunger strike. This, despite a recent court ruling that paves the way for him to compete as a presidential candidate in the 2024 polls. For more about his calls on the opposition leader and the Senegalese authorities, I reach Alion Tin B.
I have said in a post yesterday to Ousmane Sonko to stop the hunger strike. And I say also to all the women that are detained in the prison to stop hunger strike. And I say to the president, Macky Sall, that time is up to have peaceful situation in Senegal and to release all the political detainees. It was the meaning of my post, because we need free, fair, and peaceful election in Senegal. We have a very, very difficult electoral process with violence, with tension. And now we need a very peaceful political context to go have a very good election, free and fair.
People are suggesting that embarking on the hunger strike is the best way to put pressure on the authorities to let him go, because they said it appears that that is the only way that the government or the authorities responds positively.
You know, they have done it. Ousmane Sonko have done 30 days of hunger strike. 30 days. Do you think it? He was, many people was afraid for his life. And you know, it was Caliph, the Caliph General of the Murid, who said to Ousmane Sonko to stop. And he gave him something to eat. And this is why Ousmane Sonko have stopped the hunger strike. I, you know, if you make hunger strike, I think it is mean to put pressure. But I think that it is important to have also political leaders that can hear, understand, and have enough humanity to have the good response of hunger strike.
Government says it will appeal against the court's ruling that enables Ousmane Sonko to contest next year's election. So basically, his troubles are not going away, is there?
I think so. I'm afraid because it is not a sign of a future stability on this country. I think not that it was a very good thing that in Ziegenhaus, the judge said, let Ousmane Sonko go and run. He has the ability and the right to go and run for the presidential election. This morning, when the delegates of Ousmane Sonko went to the direction of the election, general direction of the election, they said to him they are not receiving people this day. I think it's very serious when they are not accepting the justice decision, the judge decision. We are in a country that we are supposed to have rule of law. I think that the administration of the election have to respect the rule of law, to respect the decision of the judge. It is very important.
Alion Tin B is the founder of a think tank called the Africa Jump Center. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, And it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports. And for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin in France, where South Africa's Springboks snatched a late victory against England at the Rugby World Cup on Saturday. Defending champion South Africa was second best to England's smart tactics and precise execution for the best part of 70 minutes of their semi-finals at the Stade de France on Saturday before what's becoming a traditional great escape by the Bucks saw them steal a 3-16-15 win and set up a title decider next weekend against their fiercest rival, New Zealand. South Africa captain Siya Kolisi said he was really proud of his team but was quick to pay tribute to England, who almost defied the critics and rugby form in the repeat of the 2019 final.
England did so well in the kicking game. I think they outplayed us in that. Our discipline was awful in the first half, but especially in the key areas of the game, you know, where they could take the points. But yeah, I thought we fought back, you know, in the second half. We showed who we are and what we can do with the full 23. But yeah, we just want to thank all the South African people that traveled all the way to come here and support us.
The defending champions owe their victory to Andre Pollard, who converted a short-range try before ordering a 77th-minute penalty to give his side their second successive one-point win. Last week, they beat France 29-28 in the quarterfinals. Pollard, who replaced Maine Liebach after 30 minutes, described the win as unbelievable while admitting frustration at the Buck performance.
It's unbelievable. It's a lot of relief in this moment, and I was frustrating. We wanted our best tonight, so especially that first half. We knew we had so much more to give, and we just couldn't get there. But fair play to England. I think that put us under pressure in exactly the right area, so credit to them.
And now to the wrap of English Premier League games played on Saturday. Manchester City beat Brighton 2-1 to return to the Premier League summit on a day when the action on the pitch was overshadowed by the death of England World Cup winner Bobby Charlton. Arsenal missed the chance to end the day in top spot but recovered from 2-0 down against Chelsea to draw 2-2 and are behind City only on goal difference. Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp praised Egyptian forward Mohamed Salah after he netted twice in their 2-0 Merseyside derby victory over 10-man Everton on Saturday, saying the team's talisman has the ability to score even on less than perfect days.
I think Mo Salah played for us an incredible amount of fantastic games today. It was not his best game, but being then that clinical and the penalty and that being staying in the situation, that's probably his biggest quality, and I love that because you need somebody who brings the ball over the line.
Newcastle, whose early season struggles are now a distant memory, romped to a 4-0 win against a sorry Crystal Palace side. Brentford beat Burnley 3-0, while Wolves came from behind to beat Bournemouth 2-1, thanks to a late winner from Sasa Galadojuk. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Any dispassionate, impartial, and keen observer would have discerned in the last 2 weeks a disquieting contrast between two worlds. In Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank, misery reigns. We have the image of hopes of a people whose lives are brutish, short, and disastrous. And yet, the international community has failed the people of the Middle East. As someone who happened to have spent 25 years of his international responsibility at the United Nations to deal seriously with the Middle East, and knowing full well many of the personalities involved, the terrain and the twists and turns, I can confidently say the international community has failed these people. It is not because of lack of rain, yes, but because of the difficulties of the situation, many preferred to go for short
measures, step-by-step diplomacy, Camp David and Oslo, all of these avoiding to tackle the most difficult issue facing the international community. And the United Nations and the Security Council have really, really failed the people of the world. Instead of pursuing what should be the solution, geopolitical consideration, to win or not to win, has prevented the halting of the raging war now going on in the Middle East. Who would have thought that there would be a Security Council that would calibrate the timing of war moves? Who would have thought that responsible powers would wait to see what would be the outcome of particular military moves? We know all the possible just solutions, yet those responsible are refraining from taking action. Fortunately for the people of the Middle East, there is at the moment no possibility giving this generation of peacemakers for a solution. In contrast to this hopelessness and misery in the Middle East, on the other side of the world, also last week, heads of states from Africa, from Latin America, or in Europe, and Asia met in Beijing to celebrate the 10th anniversary of an initiative by President Xi Jinping called the Belt and Road Initiative, a project which was looking for reconciliation, drawing on the ancient Silk Route to see whether in our present day this initiative we connect with people, Asia, with Africa, with Latin America. And they all agreed in the forum, the summit last week, that this program has been very, very successful. It has brought people together. It has improved the lives of people in many countries. And yet, there are those who, for geopolitical reasons, try to find faults about this initiative, which was prepared and continues to survive for a community of shared future. The sad thing for Africa is there is a concerted attempt to convince Africans that they should turn away from this bright future. And the tool they have used is to tell Africa that there is an insidious aim to join this initiative, because it provides not only infrastructural development and human development, but also look ahead for the greening of the universe. And they tell them, don't get involved. There is at your doorstep neocolonialism, and you are involved in the debt trap. And there are many Africans, regrettably, who are buying to this nonsense. The concept of debt trap did not originate from Africa. It was first brought into being with Sri Lanka and Asia, but they have been able to turn their back on the nonsense. So I say to Africa, particularly the African academics, that you have an obligation to do your own research. It is not difficult, though it may be time-consuming. The facts are all there. Don't rely on op-ed pages, even from prestige papers. Don't take seriously even articles from prestigious economic journal. Do it yourself, and you will find out that much of the argument of debt trap doesn't make any sense. In the 1990s, there was a project called HIPIC, heavily indebted countries, most of them in the African countries. The Bretton Woods Institution and major donors tackled that East China was not even nearby. And the same conditions which produced HIPIC in the 90s is still with us. If you look at the statistics about debt trap in your research, you'll find that debt owed to China is no more than 20% of the debt of many African countries. Most of them are from Western financial institutes or business or even the IMF. So all I can say to you is the consequences of missing out at the project which has enriched Asia will be sad for us. No possibility exists for major intertextual developments in Africa than what you have here. And Africans should not allow such things to go on without fighting back. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Yes. I'm good. Yes, good. Yes. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, and I've been listening to your music. And you know what? It just reminds me of, like, it just made me want to party.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it got this club vibe. And then some other music that you have, it got that, you know, that love vibe.
Word.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like Valentine's Day all over again. Or, you know, if you don't have someone close, then by the time you hear it, you're going to need to get something close, okay?
Word.
But yes, let's talk about you, Kali. So tell me, how did you get, like, how did you know you had a skill? That's the first thing I want to know. Like, was you just singing in the bathroom? It's like, yo, you know, I sound good.
Yeah. You know, thanks for having me again. I go by the name Kali Abdul from birth. And, you know, I came into a music family, if you will. My dad, he was involved in music in a church, you know, and all of that. And, you know, when I was growing up, I used to see him writing songs, actually. You know, I would hear him humming melodies, and I would see him running to find a piece of paper to write the chords down and things like that. And I used to notice and say, that's interesting. And I had an affinity for sounds and music, and I always used to record sounds in my brain, and I'll find my way to the church and help the band set up. And then when I helped them set up, I, you know, mess around with the instrument. So I taught myself how to play drums that way. And you know, I started messing with the keys. I go to the church when it's empty and just start messing with the piano or the organ.
So this was in your blood.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's when I saw what my dad was doing, I knew this is where it was coming from for me. And over time, you know, I learned songwriting actually from my mom. And
your mom?
Yeah.
Really? Mommy had it too?
Yeah, she wasn't like a singer. She was just, I think it's just, she was a very organized person. And, you know, my uncle was getting married, and they wanted us to sing, all the kids to sing. And so I saw her. She was the first person I saw writing an actual song.
Are you
so
serious?
She wrote the lyrics. So I said, oh, that's interesting. So I picked that up.
Whoa.
Picked up arrangement and, like, organized the sounds from my dad. And, that, you know, I put those together. And that was the beginning for me.
That is fabulous. Like, I wish I could write. I mean, we was talking earlier, and I was telling you about I wish I was a poet. Like, I just want to be like. But writing is not my talent. Producing is.
All right.
So, you know, I used to DJ. I'd go to the club and I would play music, and girls would really be dancing. They'd come up like, this song, I love this song. And they'd really get into it. Now, the moment when they actually get into it because they really love the song, that's what inspired it. And so I wanted to make a song that would make you dance. And
this one is definitely going to make us dance, and we're going to take a listen to it right here. So we have Wind It by Kali Abdul.
Let me take care of you. Come on, hear what I made for you.
My
lust is illustrious. You more than a
baby, I got some blood.
I'm on your body.
Feeling his tune. He got me dancing in the studio.
That's love. That's love.
Old lady.
Appreciate that.
Got an old lady dancing in the studio.
Yeah.
So tell me about this. Like, you told me that this was from the Book of Solomon.
Yeah.
Now, I read the Book of Solomon.
All right.
And I know those songs was actually read for the Queen of Sheba.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
But you thought I ain't know that, did
you? I mean, I'm not surprised.
You are deep, so
I'm not surprised.
Yes. But yeah, so that was inspired by that is so nice though.
Yeah.
I've never heard that. That
was, yeah.
That's very good. So my question is to you, like, you know, I know that you perform,
because
I've seen your videos.
And okay.
You guys, all the listeners out there, have you seen this guy perform? He's naturally very reserved.
Yeah.
I don't know what is it about me and interviewing people that are naturally reserved. It is just like musicians are just naturally cool, calm, and collective.
Yeah.
But once they get behind the mic, it's a different
thing. Yeah.
Yes, let's get into Romantic Girl.
Oh yeah, and she came with a new type game, taking the fame to it in that game. But boy, she know how to shake that thing, how to reach that thing, gotta play that string. I play that music when the night falls, play the record that we rock and we'll be right for. All the girls in the late night flow, you made that fall, you shake that fall.
Doesn't she know that she's what I feel?
Little thing to love me like a romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like a child. I need a romantic girl. Pretty little thing to love me like a romantic girl. Pretty thing to love me like a child. She like a sign of that. I hate the sign of us apart. We like the sign of this. So we've been partners from the start. We've been mine ever since. I like to lose her in the dark. I think I found a kiss. I think she thinks I'm fine. Think I'm fine. Girl, do you love my style? I'm going to make you mine. All mine. All mine. I want a romantic girl.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer Al Santos, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, only a fool tests the depth of a river with both feet. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
No handsome guy, so first class, me and my man gon' fly. I need the ice friends, that's the realest guy.